You may be seated. Good morning again to the students that are here. It looks like you are the same bunch that we just spoke to. And I just want to tell you how delighted we are to be here in Richland County for today's oral arguments. This is our first time visiting this county for this purpose. As our viewers have probably noticed, we are not in a courtroom. We are holding oral arguments today at Mansfield Senior High School. The goal of off-site court program is to teach students a little more about our judicial system. So holding court in a high school campus not only makes a lot of sense, but we have a captive audience to boot. I want to thank the principal, Brad Callender, for making arrangements to use the auditorium to serve as today's temporary courtroom. And thanks as well to the Richland County Common Pleas Court Judge Brent Robinson for inviting the Supreme Court and the Richland County Bar Association for assisting with our visit. I also should recognize the Richland County other judges. Judge James DeWeese serves on the Common Pleas General Division bench, while Judge Heather Coakley, Ron Spahn, and Philip Mayer serve on the Domestic Relations, Juvenile, and Probate Divisions of the court. The county's municipal court judges include Judges Frank Artist and Jerry Alt in Mansfield and Judge John Schaefer in Shelby. The judges that serve on the 5th District Court of Appeals, which includes Richland County, are Judges Craig Baldwin, Patricia Delaney, Sheila Farmer, Scott Gwynn, William Hoffman, and John Wise. Today we have 3 cases on the docket and 11 area high schools that will attend oral argument, and welcome to all of the students. And really, we appreciate you being here. We appreciate the time that you've invested in prepping for these cases and your attention subsequent to the cases when you'll be debriefed. Our first case will have Mansfield, St. Peter's, and Temple Christian High Schools. Our second case, Lexington, Lucas, Madison, and Ontario High Schools. And our third case will have Clear Fork, Crestview, Plymouth, and Shelby High Schools. So with that, we will begin. Our first case is case 2014-607, In Re DS, a minor. For the appellant, Ms. Burns.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice. May it please the court. My name is Brooke Burns. I represent the minor child, DS. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. And for purposes of argument today, I will be addressing DS's claims out of order. This court has found that for a child whose case remains in the juvenile system, the aims of the juvenile court and its heightened goals of rehabilitation and treatment control his disposition. But this does not hold true for Ohio's juvenile sex offender registration statutes. Traditional juvenile dispositions terminate on a child's 21st birthday, except for orders that classify a child as a juvenile offender registrant. Under those orders, but under no other circumstance in the Ohio Revised Code, can a child whose case remains in the juvenile court become an adult of 35 or 40 years old who is still liable for the punishment he received as a juvenile offender. But unlike registrants who were over 18 when they committed their offense, the juvenile offender's registration was imposed and carried on into adulthood without the same due process protections. And unlike adult registrants, the juvenile offender's additional punishment may have been imposed at a subsequent proceeding.
Counsel, can we clarify just the record and the procedural history of what happened in the case where we had the original disposition and then we have the later hearing for purposes of the sex offender registration? But there were 2 hearings, were there not? Can you explain what happened at each of the hearings?
Yes, Your Honor. In 2010, DS was adjudicated delinquent of gross sexual imposition. He was sent to DYS, and upon his release from the Department of Youth Services in 2013, the court held both an evidentiary hearing to determine missing information about his age and a classification hearing. According to the juvenile registration statutes, classification can occur either at disposition or upon release from a secure facility under 2152-83B.
So at this evidentiary hearing, was there a dispute about how old he was? I mean, what kind of evidence had to be produced, or was there a stipulation of some kind?
There was no stipulation, Your Honor. In its complaint, the state alleged that the acts occurred during the time period between DS's 13th and 14th birthday. But at trial, the state did not present any evidence as to his age at the time of the offense. So at the time of his adjudication, at the end of his adjudication, there was no record as to how old he was.
Would you explain the significance of the age issue for us?
Yes, Your Honor. Under Ohio law, children who are under 14 are not eligible to be classified as juvenile sex offender registrants. So before DS could have been eligible for registration, the court would have had to have found that he was 14 at the time of his offense.
So he wasn't eligible for registration for some of his acts, but for the act that was that had occurred and he was sent to DYS for, he was 14 at the time.
Your Honor, that fact was not established until after he was released from DYS.
Have been important at the time of the original sentencing? Would it have mattered whether he was 13 or 14 with his disposition to the institution?
For the institutional commitment, it would not have mattered, Your Honor. Children who are 13 may be committed to the Department of Youth Services.
And the same thing for the adjudication of what activity he was involved in, it doesn't matter whether he was 13 or 14, correct?
No, Your Honor, it does not.
So the only effect of 14 is the lingering duty to report, to be registered as a sex offender, and then the reporting requirements for 20 years?
Yes, Your Honor. This specific was for 20 years. The various tier levels for juvenile offenders are for 10 years, 20 years, or until death.
And is there the possibility that that 20-year requirement will be lessened with a hearing at some duration, some part of the 20 years?
Yes, Your Honor. There is a possible for juvenile offenders to have their classifications reviewed at the end of their disposition and then at various intervals thereafter. However, what's important for purposes of constitutionality of those orders...
Let me just stop you one more question. Is that available to adults?
No, Your Honor, it is not.
No, so there's the distinction between the system of registration and reporting between the juvenile imposition and that of an adult. The juvenile is able to have hearings periodically into adulthood to determine whether it is still necessary for the imposition of the registration requirement, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
That is the difference.
Counsel, if I may stay with that, I'm over here. I'm not sure what you're arguing, though, when you say that he had a legitimate expectation of finality in the court's judgment entry in 2010. You've already explained, and I think you're right, that the purpose of juvenile law is to rehabilitate and treat, correct? Now, this young man, this was a sexual offense, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
He's on his way to the Youth Commission. That's not going to change, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
It seems to me the law says, let's see what happens there, and maybe he's not a sexual offender subject to registration. Isn't that to his benefit?
Yes, Your Honor. We are not arguing that giving a juvenile the opportunity to have treatment and rehabilitation prior to being subject to classification is not a good thing. But because registration under 2950 is punitive, it must be imposed at disposition. Now, to your earlier question, Your Honor, about...
But those two statements don't go together. If you're insisting that he be classified before he goes to Youth Commission, he's lost his opportunity to prove to somebody this was a one-time event, I am not dangerous to anybody.
Yes, Your Honor, but because registration is punishment, the only constitutionally lawful time to apply it is at disposition.
Is this a result of CP? Is this a result of our saying that this is, the registration is part of the sentence or part of, it's punitive? We haven't actually said that registration is part of the sentence yet, have we?
No, Your Honor, and true. In CP, this court did affirm that registration for juveniles is punitive, just as it held in State v. Williams, and just as it applied it to juvenile cases in
DJS. So do you want us to take the next step and say that it should be considered part of the sentence for a juvenile? I'm not a sentence, but the disposition.
Yes, Your Honor, because juveniles have the same double jeopardy rights that adults do. And the double jeopardy clause protects children against multiple successive punishments for the same offense. As already established, this court has found that registration is punitive. And
doesn't the statute permit the classification to be done at the time that the child is adjudicated or at the time the child is released?
Yes, Your Honor. The statute
does. And isn't that what the Court of Appeals said when it was applying that statute?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you disagree with the Court of Appeals or you disagree with the legislature? What is your argument to us?
Your Honor, my argument.
Everybody's wrong but you?
No, Your Honor, that is not it.
I was teasing.
The argument is when the General Assembly enacted the timing provision in 2152-83B, it did not envision registration to be punishment. Instead, as stated in the purpose statement of 2950-02B, it intended for it to be civil and remedial.
Okay, so when did it become criminal? If it's a civil proceeding and juvenile proceedings are civil, when do you think it all became criminal?
When this court announced its decision in State v. Williams, this court recognized that all the changes in 2950 made the chapter punitive.
So we've done it.
As to adults.
Your Honor, this court applied Williams to juvenile cases in In re DJS and in In re CP. So as to adults and juveniles, it is punishment. And because it is punishment, there is only one time that it can be lawfully applied to children. Juveniles have a legitimate expectation of finality in the judgments adjudicating them delinquent and imposing disposition. Under the law, the only time that a child may receive an additional sanction for his case is if he commits a new act or violation. For example, a violation of probation or a violation of parole. Contrary to the state's position, there is no mechanism for the court to, without any discretion or unfettered, to apply additional punishments.
Counsel, is it your position then this morning that if the classification does not happen at adjudication, it can never happen?
Yes, Your Honor, that because classification is punitive, the only lawful time to impose it is at disposition.
So do we have to declare that statute unconstitutional in your view?
Your Honor, I think that this court could apply the severance remedy that it has already applied in other registration cases and that it has already applied in other sentencing cases in the past. I believe this court could find that the clause that allows juvenile courts to classify children upon the release from a secure facility.
So would this be first impression for this court?
I believe so. On this issue, it definitely would,
Your
Honor.
What are other sister Supreme Courts around the country doing on this subject from the research that you've done?
Well, just recently, Your Honor, after briefing was closed in this case, but it is submitted as additional authority, the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania, relying in part on this court's decision in CP, found its version of SORNA to be unconstitutional under due process grounds for juveniles, in part because the irrebuttable presumption that's created by the juvenile registration statutes. A similar presumption exists here, in that at the time of classification, a juvenile court is required to order a child to comply with registration requirements for a period of 10 years, 20 years, or until death. Removal, though review happens, is not guaranteed.
Counsel, if we change the timing, as you're suggesting, by severing the portion of the statute, is there any benefit that the juvenile would lose? For example, if the court had decided to wait until after the juvenile's released from the facility, is there a possibility that registration requirements would be lighter so that if you got rid of that portion of the statute, you would always have the more severe registration requirements given at the time of disposition?
Your Honor, I think that because of the review hearings under 2152-84, the juvenile court is required at the end of disposition to review the child's classification. I think that that review hearing could have the protective effect of making sure that the juvenile's treatment, and this time after he's finished his disposition, could be considered for purposes of removing or lowering his classification.
How soon is the review process available to a juvenile?
It is supposed to occur at the end of disposition, Your Honor, which typically happens when a child is discharged from parole, which could be when a child is 17, 18, or 19 years old.
But that review is to determine what registration is necessary. It's not to revisit a registration that was imposed at sentencing, is it?
Actually, Your Honor, the review hearing under 84 is specifically to review how well the child did in treatment and rehabilitation and to determine whether the previously imposed order should be modified, reviewed, or terminated.
What would be the options of the juvenile judge take this case? Had the registration been imposed at the original disposition, child goes to DYS, comes out, and there is this review. What options for modification? Say the child is exemplary and the judge wants to lower the obligations. What options under the statute would the judge have had at that time?
At the end of disposition hearing, for a discretionary registrant like DS, the court could remove him from the registry at that time. For other registrants who are mandatory registrants, the court could lower their registration level.
If we start down this road with CP, are we going to end up criminalizing the juvenile procedure? Have we already done it by saying it's a now punishment and therefore take it out of the civil realm and place it in the criminal realm? Isn't that where we're headed here?
Your Honor, I think that is exactly what has happened.
And pardon me, please?
I think that is exactly what has happened by allowing juvenile registration to follow a child beyond the age jurisdiction of the juvenile court. In no other circumstance is a juvenile disposition allowed to cross over beyond the age of 21.
But aren't those policy decisions that belong with members of the General Assembly? We are not the policy. We're just case deciders.
Yes, Your Honor.
Policy is decided by the members of the House and Senate.
That is true, Your Honor. But as this court found in DH, any new innovation must meet the test of due process. And here, the extension of a classification beyond the age jurisdiction of the juvenile court does not do that. Children whose registration goes beyond the age jurisdiction of the juvenile court do not receive the same due process protections that children who are subject to serious youthful offender disposition or discretionary transfer have before that adult punishment.
But the acts are different. The acts of the children that are, or the juveniles that are under consideration here are different than the ones that you've just mentioned. And I see a distinction because, in the due process argument, because there are multiple opportunities for hearings in this, for a juvenile, that are not present for an adult.
Your Honor, concerning the difference of the acts of juvenile sex offenders, juvenile sex offenders actually recidivate at a rate of less than 10%. Which is lower than the recidivism rate for juveniles who commit other offenses. And as the U.S. Supreme Court found in both Graham and Miller, children who do not commit the most heinous crime, such as murder, have a twice diminished culpability, even if they commit rape, than their other juvenile offender counterparts. In this instance, the extension of a classification order beyond the age jurisdiction of the juvenile court does not afford juveniles the same due process rights than a child who may have committed a homicide offense receives during serious youthful offender proceedings.
Your rationale there for not applying this level of sanction is, again, a policy concern. And as Justice O'Donnell said, you know, maybe that's better taken up with the General Assembly. And you've used your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel?
Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court, let me start with one cleanup point in response to Justice French's question. Then I want to talk about something that seems to be the linchpin of my friend's argument here, and that is whether these classifications are punitive or not. So first, to Justice French's question about what happened here, I think that is important to clean up one thing that's just specific to this case, maybe doesn't touch the broader issues, what happened as to the issue of age. So in 2010, there was a disposition finding that Judge Hoover made. He later, when it came time to have the classification hearing, said, and this is an April 30th, 2013 entry, said, when I set the classification hearing, that meant I decided that DS was 14 at the age of the offense. So This judge, at least himself, characterized what had happened at the first disposition hearing as finding the age, maybe not explicitly by saying, I hereby find you were 14 at the time of the offense, but in Judge Hoover's mind, when he later came around to have the classification hearing, he said, well, I've already found you were 14 back in 2010. Or
Is there evidence introduced at the original hearing that would have permitted the judge to make that inference?
Your Honor, all we have is the disposition finding. That's because DS didn't put in the record the transcript of that initial hearing when he took his appeal to the Fifth District. So under the principle that we presume the regularity of those proceedings, we would presume it was found beyond a reasonable doubt, and that's how Judge Hoover later characterized it.
Did Judge Hoover put that in his journal entry, or is it in a transcript? Where is that?
It's on the disposition sheet. You can see this on the first couple of pages of the supplement that DS submitted. You can see the disposition sheet here in this juvenile court is sort of a checklist, and then Judge Hoover writes in a couple of other things, including we'll defer the classification hearing until after DYS. That's what he later, in a judgment entry of April 30, 2013, said. What I meant by that was I already found that you were 14 at the time of the offense.
But the journal entry doesn't actually say individual under 14 or 14 years of age. There's no box that was checked that actually shows the court made that specific finding, correct?
That's correct. I don't think
you're
there is
You're saying it's an inference that comes from the transfer.
Right. I would say two things, Your Honor. It's an inference that Judge Hoover said that's what I meant. But also, as you see throughout our brief, it doesn't matter because you don't need to determine, as the Chief Justice pointed out, the age at the time of disposition. It's not relevant to whether you're adjudicated delinquent.
Can we stick with your first point just for another question? But wasn't there also an evidentiary hearing? So why would there have been an evidentiary hearing if the judge had already determined that the age was 14?
Your Honor, what I read in the record here is DS objected to having the hearing at all, saying, I wasn't even 14. And what Judge Hoover said is, well, I did find that, but you're free to put on evidence if you want to rebut that. And so, yes, there was an evidentiary hearing. There was one hearing, as I read it, that dealt with both DS's challenge to not being 14 and then also whether classification was appropriate. And that's the main subject we're here about, is whether classification is appropriate.
Counsel, if I may ask along those questions, you don't question the fact that the classification of someone as an offender is punitive, do you?
I do, Your Honor. That's where I was about to turn next.
Well, unfortunately, you're before the Supreme Court of Ohio, who has already found it to be punitive. So let's move on for that for a moment. For a moment. This young man was either 13 or 14, and he had a very unfortunate encounter of a sexual nature, correct? How can you argue that him not being able to get a job or buy a house in the location of his choosing when he's 32 years old is not punitive?
Well, Your Honor, first, there are several opportunities for the classification to be removed. This is unlike what you confronted in CP and in Williams, where it was an automatic consequence of the crime. This is a forward-looking public protective decision that the juvenile judge makes.
A tier two offender at this point, correct?
At this point. That's already been re-reviewed once, and there'll be an opportunity in now about 2 years, and then 3 years after that, and 5 years after that, all those before he turns 32.
Well, wouldn't that be like if I stole your car this morning and if I thought I might return it in 5 years, you don't really have a loss?
No, Your Honor, I think it is quite different. This is a forward-looking decision where the juvenile judge is making a decision about that offender to determine whether not backward-looking punishment for what happened, but forward-looking, should registration continue to be an obligation because there's a public protection need to have that. And let me back up to talk about why we don't believe that this part of the classification system.
Before you back up, I want to stay with that for a second.
Sure.
Are you suggesting, therefore, to protect the public, what we're doing is something you did at 14, we're going to be punishing you for when you're 30, and that somehow fits under the umbrella of juvenile law?
Your Honor, it fits under the statute as the General Assembly saw fit to not say because what you did at 14 there's a consequence at 32. It's because what you did at 14 and because there's re-review at the end of disposition and re-review 3 years after that and 3 years after that, there have been multiple times where the judge has looked across the podium at the offender and said, it is because of the actions you have continued to take after age 14, it still is something that needs to be done in the public interest. So,
this is an opportunity for a trial court in a juvenile court judge to continue to review the progress made by someone adjudicated in a case like this, a sexual offense, and say there's been rehabilitation, there's been character development, and you are no longer necessary, it's no longer necessary for you to report as an offender, and I'm removing that registration requirement. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. If you look at
so this is a benefit that accrues to an individual who has been through the juvenile proceeding as an opportunity to get rehabilitated.
It absolutely is a benefit, and that's why I think we're in a completely different world than In Re CP, where this court emphasized that it was the lifelong, automatic, extensive public notification that made that part of Senate Bill 10 punitive. Take a look at Williams at paragraph 20, where the court explicitly says portions of Senate Bill 10 remain remedial. Or look at the syllabus of CP that says
if the counsel for DS is urging that as a matter of constitutional law, DS is entitled to have disposition completed at one point. That is when the child is originally before the court. The full disposition, including the application of registration requirements, which in this case would be optional, as I understand it, due to the age and the nature of the offense. Is that correct?
Correct.
And so they're urging that we find as a matter of due process, the requirement is do it all at one time. Now, with respect to the application of the statute to this particular individual, is it correct that had the registration requirement been imposed at the original disposition, that when this child came out of DYS and there is a further hearing to evaluate progress, that registration requirement could have been removed at that point in time?
Your Honor, it wouldn't have been right at the release from DYS. So if it had been imposed at the disposition, and I think that that's mainly made as a double jeopardy claim here in addition to due process, but if it had been imposed at that time, there would have been mandatory re-review under .84 at the end of both DYS and parole. So there is that mandatory re-review whenever
it was. And could the judge have decided at that point in time to lift it?
Yeah, and I think that just emphasizes what several members of the court have pointed out, that it is to the benefit of the juvenile.
Well, then what's the harm in going where they're asking us to go and is to say, do it all up front when you're there with your lawyer, when all the evidence is presented. The child loses no benefit.
Your Honor,
and the state
I disagree.
Loses no benefit if it's all done at the front end.
Your Honor, I think imposing it as a matter of constitutional law to say it must happen then, instead of, as the General Assembly said, that the juvenile judge may pick whether it makes sense to do it before or after DYS. As Justice Lanzer asked, what benefit might there be to having it after DYS? Well, the juvenile judge simply has more information. They get to see whether treatment...
But he gets to utilize that information on the mandatory review once in... DYS and parole is over. There's a mandatory review, right?
Yes.
So while the juvenile is in the institution and then on parole, he has to, well, he doesn't have to report in the institution, but when he's on parole, he would, correct?
Yes, if it was imposed, say, coming out of DYS, then yes, there'd be a reporting obligation during the parole period, and then that would be reviewed at the end of parole.
All right, and then the judge is mandated at the end of parole to review the status of that child, correct?
Correct.
All right, I don't see where that is, that option should be repugnant to the state.
I'm not saying the option of .84 is repugnant to the state at all. I'm saying the statute gives the juvenile judge the choice of whether to decide to impose registration before or after the DYS term.
And we don't allow for that in any other situation. An adult, for example, that is being sentenced, and we all agree that those are punitive, the nature of those sentences are punitive, you don't get an add-on at a later date?
Well, Your Honor, one thing that is similar to it, although it doesn't happen in Ohio right now, is deferred sentencing, where there's an adjudication, this is for adults also, an adjudication of guilt, there may be a parole term, and then what the sentence fully is at the end of that supervised term.
Yeah, we don't have that here.
That's correct.
Okay.
You say it's analogous to that.
All right, let me draw your attention. Opposing counsel mentioned the Pennsylvania case. Has Pennsylvania made a decision that that this registration is punitive?
Your Honor, what the Pennsylvania Supreme Court did at the end of last year was to say, because there's an irrebuttable presumption for certain juveniles, this is the In Re JB case, it's that irrebuttable presumption that troubled the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And if you look across the country, the last three decisions I'm aware of are out of Wyoming, Pennsylvania, and New Hampshire just a couple of weeks ago. All of them turned on this difference between automatic classification and discretionary classification. That's the same line that we're urging you to look at that distinguishes this case from CP. It is not...
So you're saying that there's now... four states that believe, as the Ohio Supreme Court promulgated in CP, that this is punitive, and they're New Hampshire, Wyoming, and Pennsylvania.
No, Wyoming actually went the other way. So I'm saying the commonality of those three cases is that all of them found whether there was a constitutional problem or not turned on whether the classification was automatic or, in the Pennsylvania Supreme Court's words, irrebuttable. And so really what I think my friends are asking you to do is to extend CP to say that all of Senate Bill 10 is punitive. Every part of the registration, despite the multiple opportunities to revisit the classification.
Mr. Hendershot, if the juvenile judge decides not to remove the classification and the individual turns 21, what happens then? Is that individual then treated as an adult with all of the registration requirements that an adult would have, so that, as Justice O'Neill suggests, it would extend till age 30 or so?
Your Honor, my reading of the statute is that the consequences remain what the consequences were as being labeled as a sexual offender as a juvenile. And so what you retain, even becoming an adult, are these opportunities to have the classification removed, which you would not have if you committed a sexual offense as an adult.
The statute says the opportunity for removal remains. What portion of the statute are you referring to?
2152.85. And so there's this timing mechanism of there's mandatory re-review under 0.84 at the end of the entire disposition. Then there's re-review 3 years later, 3 years later, and then every 5 years after that. And so those, if you add those up, for anyone who can be classified, 14 would be the youngest, you would have those opportunities that extend into adulthood.
So there are dual tracks then. The individual who is classified as an adult is not entitled to any hearings. The individual classified as a juvenile is.
That's right. It is something that relates back to their... And that is something that distinguishes committing this offense as a juvenile and being adjudicated delinquent and being an adult. There are these multiple opportunities to tailor the registration to the offender instead of being automatic.
But the other sanctions that are part of the adult registration, the fact that you can't, live within a school, certain distance from a school, certain jobs, et cetera, those remain with this juvenile, correct?
Your Honor, I think that as to living within 1,000 feet of a school, to my knowledge, it hasn't been interpreted yet, and it's strangely worded so that it could be read as to not apply to juveniles because it uses the word conviction, and we don't really use the word conviction for juveniles typically. That remains an unsettled question.
We haven't
question.
Had that case yet, as you're saying.
Correct.
It's coming.
Counsel, what happens if he violates and he doesn't register?
Then the violation is treated, I think, at the same level of offense as the underlying crime. And so that would differ depending on whether not registering happened as a juvenile or as an adult.
So at that point, though, I guess my concern is something that was raised in the amicus brief, that at that point, let's say a juvenile doesn't register as required, that the adult sentence at that point is then imposed, and that's done without a jury trial. Isn't that troubling in terms of a due process question?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think that it is. It is you are acting as an adult there, and so you're aware of the consequences. And I see that my time is up. Let me just emphasize that the statute here, which is being challenged constitutionally, maximizes the juvenile court's discretion, maximizes the information for the juvenile court, and maximizes the opportunities to revisit that decision every couple of years.
Unless he violates.
Well, yes, Your Honor, committing a new
offense. And then the protections are fewer. And then the protections are fewer at that point than you would have as an adult, are they not?
Sure, just as if you'd committed those acts as an adult, and you are an adult at that point.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, if I may, one more question. You will agree that juvenile court's jurisdiction for punishing someone ends at their 21st birthday, would you not?
Yes, the juvenile court's ability to impose new punishment does end, as you said, in In Re JV.
New or old, punishment. They cannot punish past the 21st birthday, correct?
That is correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Under Ohio's juvenile registration statutes, juveniles receive the worst of both worlds, being subject to punishment that will follow them into adulthood, but not having the same due process or double jeopardy protections as their adult counterparts. For this reason, DS requests that this court find that the only time a court may lawfully impose a juvenile sex offender classification is at disposition, and that, like all other traditional juvenile dispositions, classification must cease at the age of 21.
Counsel, your friends on the other side say that was really done here because the trial court wouldn't have set the time for a classification hearing in the future if the juvenile were not 14 years old. How do you respond to that?
Your Honor, while regularity can be presumed, facts cannot. And the court and the parties both agreed that the facts that were proven at trial did not include a finding as to DS's age at the time of his offense.
And there was no evidence that would have said this is how old this juvenile is?
No, Your Honor. Because he's entered an admission and he did not stipulate to being age eligible for registration during his admission, the only evidence as to his age was given after he was released from DYS at an evidentiary hearing before the classification hearing was scheduled.
Well, your opponent says that hearing was to allow for the juvenile to rebut the judge's conclusion that is evidenced that he was 14, that is evidenced by the fact that a classification hearing was scheduled.
Your Honor, the court's statement as to opining that the youth must have been 14 was not based on anything that was actually in the record. So factually, the judge was incorrect in finding that he thought the juvenile was 14. He must
Your
have been.
Your client did have an opportunity at that hearing to present his age, did he not?
Yes, Your Honor.
And he did not do it.
Your Honor, the state called a treatment provider to give information as to age. DS did not have any other testimony other than cross-examining those witnesses.
So there was no birth certificate or no statement from DS that he was not 14 at the time the offense was committed?
No, Your Honor. But under finality of judgments, that determination should have been found at his original adjudication.
And counsel, the opportunity to rebut it wasn't taken advantage of by your client.
His attorney did cross-examine, Your Honor, and I think that is the only thing that he could have done.
Thank you.
And counsel, you agree that there are two tracks to registration if a juvenile is not released from registration by age 21, that there still would be the possibility for additional review even after he turns 21?
Your Honor, while the opportunity for review exists, our position is that simply having that opportunity does not cure the unconstitutionality of the classification, which occurs at the time the classification order is imposed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decision. Thank you.